I got a slight problem here. I don't have the 4250.
Do you have $17 and a good watch?
No, I don't. I have, I have $2 and a Casio.
I'm gonna have to say goodnight.
Hey, it's the steering committee, and we're back from our Thanksgiving travels. Me, after close to 3,000 miles behind the wheel of a beaten-down Chevy Malibu rental with a bent front wheel, but also with Apple Play, which is key. And Doug, from just across town, you were smart and played it close to home this year.
I had to go all the way over from Congress Park to Wash Park, so you know, very, very
wow,
far.
Wow, what
almost,
was that like?
Almost 2.1 miles. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
So. Hit any weather along the way? Or?
Yeah, it was snowing a little bit, actually, but yeah, we managed to make it there.
It's good to be back, and we've got a really cool guest tonight. Well, actually, we've got two friends sitting in with us tonight, two timepiece gentlemen, if you will. The first is a guy whose company looms large in the world of automotive podcasts right now. You may know him from his many mentions on Spike's Car Radio, of which we're big fans, of course. Though I think we've got you on first as an actual guest. So,
absolutely,
Jay Turkbas of Sheffield Watches, welcome to the steering committee.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much. It's an honor.
We're gonna have fun tonight, and we've got our pal Harry Liss back sitting in with us tonight as well, because he's not only a sponsor of the committee, but he's our go-to watch guy. And when you know two guys with their own watch companies, you make it a party.
We should put them in the same room together, you know?
Recurring guests. Have I earned the title of recurring guest?
Well, how many times is it now?
Yeah, you're up about five at least.
And we have to take a picture. We always forget to take a picture with our guests. So before you leave, we've got to get a good picture. And we all say hi to Spike from Denver. But so, Jay, you are a California guy, but you've also got 1 foot in Colorado.
And Utah
is
have like 3 feet
as well. Mm. So you didn't come here just to see us. You were here and made time for us.
Yeah, you're here. I've been traveling a lot back and forth between Park City, where I live, and Broomfield, Boulder area.
Ah, okay.
Working on a project, managing a business that's part of my day job.
Yeah.
And had the good fortune that I'm here at the right time so I could sit down with you guys.
Yeah, you grew up, you were a skier. Yeah, you think you skied for CU up here in Boulder. Mm-hmm. This sort of, I guess, set your trajectory for the rest of your life, right, as far as business. And
It's a long story short, I wanted to be in the ad business.
Ah.
Hmm. And so I was in mass communications, and actually I skied for the University of Colorado, and I also skied on the Coors Pro Tour after that.
Oh,
and,
no kidding.
And nice. Then I actually finished school in Minnesota because my wife couldn't get a teaching job in Boulder. But I took the relationships that I had, which were really fantastic, that I made in Boulder with Dave Jacobs, who started Spider Ski Wear.
Ah, okay.
And he had myself and a number of us on the team and on the pro team help him like test all of his Spider gear. And so from the moment where he started it in his kitchen up off of Pearl Street to the point where we saw it blow up to become this huge brand, it was really a great learning for me in the ski side of the business, because even though I was a ski racer and I was going to go in the ad business, I ended up running a ski wear company for a few years called Powderhorn Ski Wear.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Cool.
And that led me into sourcing a number of products around the world, actually, in terms of product development and some marketing. And that segued into working for Rollerblade, another hot brand in Minnesota that
develop. Wait, they were a Minnesota company?
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know.
I figured they were in Venice Beach or something.
Well, they were really smart. And a woman that ran the marketing, Mary Horwath is her name, she just realized it wasn't a hockey product, that it was actually a lifestyle product. And that's kind of how, you know, you look at some things and you think that they're just for, you know, if you don't kind of have an open mind, you sometimes don't see that there are other avenues of where you can succeed with some of these things. And so that blew up, and then they were part of the Nordica Group.
Okay.
And we were talking earlier about how I moved out east. I went to work for Nordica, the ski boot company, in marketing and athlete development, and really didn't like the weather. and so we moved back to Minnesota, and that's where I started consulting and developing a number of other inline products and other products throughout the 90s for different companies. And in the early 2000s, I landed at a company called Shock Doctor, which was and still is the leading mouthguard manufacturer in the world, and for many different sports. And that's the gestation of other businesses that were combined with that company. And then one of those businesses is here in Colorado.
Okay.
And I was in product development and management of these businesses in different ways. And so I have now been commuting back and forth here for a while with a company called Pearl Izumi, is a fantastic, authentic heritage brand. Yeah. But all through that, and I kind of mentioned this in the development around my watch, is that all of those things that you learn over 30 years of product development and working with factories all over the world, especially in Asia, you have a relatively high level of comfort around, you know, doing some of this kind of stuff where it's like, it's not that scary, because it can be scary doing some new things like this. So, so it's been an interesting journey, and it's still ongoing.
We're a little familiar with the background on starting the Sheffield Watch Company. Can you talk to our audience a little bit about that and kind of give them an intro to it?
Because I think it's a great beginning, right?
It's a great story. Yeah. I love hearing it.
Yeah. So we talked about this a little bit earlier. My family, my mom and dad, they were really wonderful people, but they love cars themselves. And I got that from them. They weren't as big about watches, but they knew I loved watching Sea Hunt and James Bond. And
that's how we all get started. James Bond. It's the origin story for all.
It's all his fault.
I agree. And I love to swim and dive underwater, and they bought me a Sheffield dive watch when I was about 11 years old. That was in 1970. And I, of course, I had to check it out right away and dive into a pool and, you know, look at goggles and read it under the water and all that kind of stuff. But it was really cool because it was just so different than any other Timex or Bulova or anything like that. And, of course, I wasn't aware of Rolexes and Omegas at that era, at that age. But, you know, this was a really special watch for me. And over the years, you know, I wore that until I ended up getting, you know, a larger faced diving watch when I was in high school after I graduated and things like that. But I always kept that Sheffield in a drawer, and it was all scratched up. It's still that way. And it still ran pretty well. Huh. It was a hand wind. It wasn't an automatic. Yeah. Hmm. But I've always wanted to, you know, kind of recreate the experience of that, getting that watch, the reasons why, the story around it was a motivator for me, but I never really had the time to kind of like think about how would I do this. But at the tail end of COVID, I started to go, you know, I've been working remote because a lot of us did that. And I started to do some research on, I couldn't travel to the factories, but I knew that there was a significant watch manufacturing, system in South Asia in China. But part of my thought was, well, if I was, I can't really, you know, I love Porsches and I can't really build a Porsche or do a Singer. So I thought, well, maybe I can recreate this Sheffield, this watch that I had, this brand, because they had gone bankrupt in About 74.
Oh, really? So, and where were they? Where, I mean, were
it
they?
It was a New York-based company.
A New York company. Okay.
But they developed and built all their watches in Switzerland. There were Swiss movements. Mm-hmm. And they were essentially a Bulova comparative at that time frame. They had a wild range. There's a lot in the archives that I found that I can go back to that I wouldn't do, but there's a few watches that are within this realm that are pretty cool.
I feel like anything went back then. Like you had the Pasha interiors and the Porsches. You had some of these crazy watches, you know, it's just, and what happened to American watchmaking? We touched a little bit on that with you, Harry, there was this long storied history, probably hundreds of companies, you know, better than I.
And you know, it's interesting because I think a lot of brands went through a similar sort of trajectory where they were really popular, and then a lot of things changed for a lot of different reasons, and then people came back and said, "What the heck happened to that?" And so some things had some life breathed back into them, and others were maybe a little too far gone. But there was a lot of change that kind of happened for a 20, 30 year span, whether it's quartz movements coming in or things being outsourced overseas and whatnot. And so it's just the brands that existed, the models that were being developed by brands, what people were willing to experiment with, all kind of went in a lot of different directions. And some people did really well and others did not fare so well.
As I've sort of gotten into this hobby, I've researched a little bit I'm from, Concord, Massachusetts, but I spent a lot of time in Waltham, Massachusetts, which was traditionally, its nickname was Watch City.
Yeah.
And it was the Waltham Watch Company. And I've gotten a lot of interest.
You still have the radium in the soil to this day.
Possibly.
It's probably nothing to joke about, but
I found that really interesting. And I mean, they had some very significant watches, you know, going into the 60s, 70s, and then company's still around, but it's basically been reformed, but it's in Switzerland and it's a different company altogether.
Doug's family's Hamilton is like one of the I mean, I think we mentioned it in one of the previous episodes, but it's an original Hamilton made in Pennsylvania that it's got the box and papers with it. It's incredible. It's
my family found it's a pocket watch. It's a large pocket watch, but in a wooden case with papers and everything. And it looks like it's never been. Looks like it's never been used or you know, never been held in
almost new old pockets, stuff, like right?
that. Yeah, almost. Yeah,
and there was Elgin outside of Chicago, I know. I mean, I'm sure you go on and on, but it's...
And a lot of them just don't kind of exist. You're waiting for someone to come around.
The one thing I will say, being a realist and objective, nobody needs another watch company. You know, that's what I was saying. I mean, there's so many great watches. Your watch is awesome.
Thank you.
And, you know, I credit you to doing so much of it in the United States with your own movement. That's amazing. And the thing I felt is that if I was going to do this, I really wanted to create it wasn't going to be something that's this incredible movement, you know, watch collector kind of thing. It was is to try to create the highest level value at the highest level performance, and the biggest objective was to sell it at as close to the same price as my parents bought my watch in 1970, which was $13.
Which translates into about $108. I was shocked when I saw that's what these watches sell for. I think they're fantastic. Like your watches, Harry. I mean, it's just these look like much more expensive watches.
But that's an incredible story, and that's an incredible heritage to pull from.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of fly-by-night companies or companies that have even been popular in the last few years that at least when I started Jack Sloan, and I'm sure what you felt about this, when you're starting your company is like, there's a lot of stuff that's gone a lot of different directions and few people I think have captured the nostalgia and sort of the direction that you went in with your first watch. Mm-hmm. Right. And Sheffield was this homage and this sort of nod back to that experience. Mm-hmm. And I think things have gone left and right and up and down, but few people have really captured that moment.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I'm glad that that's come through, because I go back to the fact, again, that we don't need nobody really needs another watch in this in the world. But I think what resonates with me with really great product is the story around those products. Mm-hmm. And as long as, you know, I can maintain the ethos behind what I've been trying to do with not only this first quartz watch range, but I'm trying to do that with soon to be released automatic homage to the original watch I had.
Well, and you've got the two things everyone wants. You've got the story, and you can't fake the funk. I mean, you can't manufacture that legacy. Mm-hmm. And you're selling an honest product at an honest price. And I feel like these are two things that everyone wants, you know?
Well, I'm trying hard. But the thing is, you know, I'm not very good, and I'm learning really fast on how to post on Instagram.
Oh, God. I think we're all us.
You're in a safe space.
Yeah,
we're
my 11-year-old daughter could teach you a thing or two, I think. Yeah. But it's...
God, what can I say today? You know?
You got to be cool, but you can't seem to be trying too hard.
Oh, man.
You know? Well, that brings me to my next question. How did the collaboration with Spike's Car Radio come about?
Well, this is unbelievably... I'm so lucky. So I will tell that right away. And so I'm driving back from Colorado in July or end of June, actually, back to Park City, because I was driving back and forth instead of flying all the time. And I was, I could remember this very clearly. I was just passing Evanston, Wyoming, and that's only about an hour from Park City. And I'm listening to Spike's podcast, and he had just interviewed, a gentleman who, and I can't remember his name, and I don't remember the watch brand, but who had built a watch completely, component in the United States.
Yeah, I remember that one.
It's like a $40,000 watch.
I know that one,
You sent me that episode.
I sent you that episode,
And
I think he's in L.A., I think, the watchmaker.
It's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, the guy is amazing. It's just amazing. And but at the end of the podcast, Spike says, you know, it'd be nice if somebody just could make a really great watch for under $200. And he just kind of like said it in passing. And I thought, I said, well, shoot, I'll just, what the hell? I DM'd him and I just said, hey, I heard your podcast. I'm actually doing that. I'm just about ready to bring it to market. And, I'd like to send you a watch. And since you don't want to give me your address, I'm sure I'll send it to Paul's law office.
And good call.
So I sent four watches to him. He says, I can't wait. He answered me. And I went, holy cow. I mean, I can't believe this guy actually answers.
He's a good dude.
And so he got the watches a week later. And then a week after that, all of a sudden on the podcast, oh my gosh, we got this cool watch, this great Sheffield. Mm-hmm. I can't believe it's what it cost. And we're going to keep the lefty and we're going to raffle it off. Mm-hmm. And he was just Mr. Enthusiastic all the way around.
Awesome. You can't buy that.
No. I just went, you know, I'm praying right now. Thank you so much.
That's awesome.
If you're a watch fan, I'm sure you follow Hodinkee.
Yeah.
And they did a great episode of Talking Watches with him. And he brings out some heavy hitters, but he also brings out like a $100 watch.
Yeah.
He brings out an old Nike watch and some other stuff. And that's one of the things I think is really cool is people who can touch different segments of the market and understand that there's a different experience for each one of those things, and they're all valid. You don't always have to be wearing $100,000 Patek Philippe.
Right.
You can be wearing the $100 Nike watch to go work out, and that's important too.
Yeah.
Well, it's very interesting because it's all around. A lot of folks that have bought these watches, it's a spectrum of people. I've had a number of folks buy them for their groomsmen's gift, and they say, nice. This is a perfect thing to give my groomsmen.
Yeah.
And then I have fathers who are buying them for their sons and buying one for themselves to say, hey, you know, I'm going to get this for my 16-year-old son or when they graduate from high school or something like that. And then there's folks that have Daytonas that are buying this because it's just a different thing. Just to your point, it's just that it's like... It's a spectrum of interest. It's a magical thing is kind of what I call watches. They're like a Porsche.
Well, I think even more to that point, I think there's a lot of overlap with like, you know, if you love cars, I mean, depending on what your budget is, though, you may be able to get nice stuff, but we all still sometimes love, you know, stuff all over in the spectrum on the automotive world, you know, the cheap and cheerful car sometimes, or like the one that, you know, your first car you have nostalgia about, or, you know, even
slow
just like
car
a
fast.
And a lot of guys with big collections will sometimes just have more fun in, you know, something, you know, cheap and fun. You know?
I can tell you this. My son had a Fiesta ST. That was one of the most fun cars.
Yeah, there you go.
That's, yeah, those are fantastic.
I'm going, you know, this is like the clutch, the shit. It was so easy. It was so nice. That car's so great.
Yeah.
And to take it to an incredibly lower level, one of my most favorite cars was the 5-speed Scion XB.
Oh, yeah.
I had two of those, and I stiffened the chassis and put better wheels on it, and that was the Japanese one, not second gen, which was terrible actually.
Yeah,
but it was
the XB was the really boxy square.
Yeah,
one.
Those were really cool.
But those were really fun. No, those were cool cars.
It was really fun. So you know that Spectrum, and then I have an 83 and an 84 911.
Okay,
which is like a fast slow car.
Sure,
you know? And it's just I always say the chunk of the. When you close that 911 up, the door up there, it's just got that, like, it sounds like a safe. Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
I knew exactly what you meant when you said that. You have to hear this noise. It's just a very satisfying clink noise.
So 83 and an 84?
Yeah.
No kidding. Okay. So was one a Targa? Is one a coupe? Is one, what's?
It's interesting. My old boss, when I first started, a friend of mine, when I first started at Shock Doctor, we weren't into Porsches or any cars like that, anything like that. Well, I mean, we love cars, but he ended up buying from one of our reps a 97 Carrera S.
Okay.
And when it got dropped off in Minnesota, because he bought it from a rep in the Seattle area, at the time he had just had knee surgery, so he couldn't drive it. Mm. And I had never driven a 911 before, especially a 993. And he said, "Hey, could you pick it up with me and drive it back to my house?"
Tough job.
"Of course I can." And I had been in, like, a friend of mine had a 914-6, his family, like, it was 18. I was in Wisconsin.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Perfect Wisconsin car.
Fantastic. I mean, it was like a go-kart. Yeah. But in between, I hadn't really been in a lot of Porsches. And well, anyway, I got to drive this thing, and it was like, holy cow, it's point and shoot, man. I mean, it was just like, then he started bugging me, "You got to get one. Yeah. You got to get one." So in 06 or 05, I bought on eBay up in out of Duluth an 83 911 SC that had already had roof bumpers and had been some work had been done on it. But nothing particularly special, and that became, and still have that car. That was my first Porsche, and then I ended up setting it up for street track, so I could, you know, I was in the Porsche Club, the Nordstern Club in Minnesota, and I still am a member, and we had a really great track up in Brainerd.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And so, you know, of course, lowered it, you know, adjustable torsion bars, suspension, bump steer, new, you know, Recaros, the whole bit, Wevo mounts, Wevo shifter, and everything, so that it was just really set up really well for both. And it just started the sickness. And 2 years later, we bought my wife, and she still has it, this pristine 06 Cayman S.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Great, I mean, cars. It's pristine. It's only got 23,000 miles on it. And I happened to find another one, so I got an 87 911 that I really regret that I sold. But my son, I had to pay tuition that year. So
tuition happens. Yeah.
Oh,
it's,
yeah. 87.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. The G. And then I felt so bad after that that I ended up buying that 84.
Okay. Okay.
Which was a German gray market that come in. So it's a lighter.
Oh yeah,
slightly lighter.
Rest of world spec,
and it's got a little bit higher compression.
Okay,
and it's got the nicest 915 transmission I've ever driven.
Really,
it's like I'm so careful with it. I just don't want to screw it up because it is. It's just the gentleman that owned it before me had restored a lot of Porsches and 356s. Mm. He was very careful with this car, and it was really. So I did that and.
Let me ask you about the 915. I have never driven one. I've only driven a later G50 transmission 911. But if you're, how is it when you're used to one, when you have one?
Well, it's looser. It's definitely looser, you know. And first and second are always the touchiest. Like, and I had, when I had my 83 rebuilt, I built the engine and I also, the top end, and I also had to get first and second synchros. Mm. Usually what happens is people are trying to downshift into first too soon, or else they miss, because the H pattern is slightly different, that between fifth and reverse, you tend to nick the fifth when you're going to reverse or vice versa. And that's why I put a Wevo in when you're on the track, because you really can't mess it up. But it's really not as just as smooth and as easy as a G50. It's really, you know, some, my favorite transmissions are, because I had a couple of them, and I still have an 83, 944. The 944s are the super easy to drive. I mean, it's just like, it's relaxing, you know, it's,
yeah,
it's really,
it's a
nice,
very smooth, very easy action on that. Yeah. And I know you mentioned that to us in an email, that you really, that really resonated with you.
Yeah.
How the 944 transmission felt.
It's, that's a great car. My son, when he moved, he worked out in California, we had an 86 944, and we kept driving it and driving it, and he drove it to like 200,000 miles, and finally the transmission went out, and we just sold it. It was a bummer because it was a fun car. But no, I mean, what happened though is, and I probably should stop talking about, but when I was on the track, you know, we did track days, you know, we get certified by Nordstern. We had really, really solid driving instruction. There's some really great drivers in Minnesota, and great instructors, as they're all everywhere. But I started to get tired of getting beat on that mile-long straight, because it's a mile-long straight. There's 10 turns.
It's a drag strip, is it not? Yeah.
Yeah. And so I could stick with a lot faster cars in the corners because I was taught well, and I had a kind of good feel for the car. It's a little scary with the 911, you know, don't lift is true. I said, this sucks. You know, I got to get a faster car. So I ended up getting and I bought it here in Colorado. I bought a 2001, no, an 01 Boxster S.
Okay.
Yeah. But then we built the engine up to a 3.6.
Oh, wow.
Ooh.
And put PS9s, short shift, GT3 control arms, you know.
Ooh, yeah.
Better headers, kept the cats and kept the muffler and stuff.
Yeah. It's a hot rod Boxster.
Did not gut it or anything else like that. Took out the convertible, put the hard top on. But finally, I wasn't getting creamed on that straight. Right. So I could keep up enough so that I could catch up to him again and pass him around. It was all DEs. I never really did the couldn't afford or rationalize spending all that money on racing. So, but that car I still have. It's a fantastic car. It's,
up to a three. Do you know, have you ever dynoed it to find out what it's putting out?
We thought it could get, you know, it was getting close to, it was probably around 290, and it was got lighter. I used lighter wheels and of course both on the 911 and on the Cayman, I would use, not the Cayman, but the Boxster. I'd get Hoosiers and Nirvana, you know, I mean, my times would go down by a second and a half.
Don't you have to do something with an oil baffle or something in those cars when you add
too. Oil baffle and lower, I forgot the belt. There's so many things you can do to that car to make it amazing.
So underrated and undervalued right now. I think people are discovering that.
I think they are now. Yeah. They're having a moment. So that's so what you said, 99, right?
2001.
Okay. So it's still, but it's a first generation Boxster.
Yeah.
986. Which, you know, I mean, it was a great product for Porsche. It did really well for them.
Saved them.
I mean, before even the Cayenne came along. Yeah. But like that one did a lot for them. But now I feel like they are, first of all, they're just, I think they're aging well. They're looking better and better even. And, I think they're getting appreciated. They're really, it's a really competent, you know, sports car right
really
out of the gate.
So
well, the S, I think is just enough better that it is worth spending the money. But I think the next best great value is the 09 Cayman S.
Yeah.
I think that one, and if you want to track it with Tiptronic, that's even a, if you don't want to shift, that's a fantastic car.
I guess it would have been the PDK in 09, right? The problem is they made so fewer 09 through 12 or whatever it was than the one.
Much smaller.
The economic downturn, all this kind of stuff.
It came at a rough time, but I'm obsessed with them. The way the taillights look on those, on the sort of the refreshed, it's a slightly different shape and they just look gorgeous, but they're very hard to find.
Great car. My last two Porsches have been Caymans. You know, my first Porsche was a 911. You know, there's something about the way a Cayman or a Boxster drives.
Well, going back to Spike and Zuckerman, that GT4S.
They love that thing.
Yeah.
But you know, I think a 13 or 14 GTS is it?
Just yeah.
That's a great car.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
In the Boxer or Cayman form.
I think that's a if you get a good deal, I think that's a good deal. A six.
But if you get the, I think they all come, because I think that's one of the things is that sport exhaust. It's also just one of the best sounding recent Porsches they've ever released.
Shout out Dan McInnes.
He had one.
I don't know if you listen to the Smoking Tire at all, but he often talks about our pal Dan McInnes because he has a Spider, much like Matt has. His is Python Green. It's a 22, and he has, I think, close to 70,000 miles on it right now.
Good for him.
And it's one of four Porsches in his garage, so he's become a celebrity through mileage, basically. Yeah. I think we probably should take a quick break. When we come back, I feel like I want to ask you how many guys are sort of in your position right now. How many guys are there? It can't be too many who have started their own watch company like you have, and we have two of you in one room. So I want to just get some some thoughts. Meeting of the minds here together. We have a couple of ad reads, but before I forget, Doug knows this. Harry, you don't know this, but Johnny Lieberman will be on soon. So we're very excited about that. Thank you to our mutual friend, Lindsay Jesch, who made that happen. That was a nice surprise before Thanksgiving. Big fans of all those guys, of course. But we gave away a watch, Jack Sloan watch, the first. We had a winner.
Thank you to everyone that participated. We really appreciate spreading the love.
Who was the winner, Doug?
Well, he goes by Alpha Resto Gods on Instagram. We call him Dennis.
I don't think it's his Christian name, but
I don't think so. It might be a middle name.
He's a god.
Doug,
we had a very rigorous and scientific method of selecting the winner.
Absolutely, which you may
have seen on Instagram.
Well, I don't know if you know or not. The steering committee legal department was all over this.
You tapped on a roulette wheel app on your phone, much like PricewaterhouseCoopers does, I'm sure, for the Oscars and other big events. Yeah. You know. So,
and if you want to, I mean, this could be part of Doug's legal corner is arguing the validity. But I trust Doug as my chief legal counsel for Jack Sloan. Yes. I trust Doug inherently.
Yes. Well, we said we would pick at random. We entered in all the eligible people, and this wheel just went through randomly.
Not everyone followed the directions to a T, so we tried to limit it to. So next time, read the instructions. But we actually had a really good response. It was great. Mm-hmm. We picked a winner fair and square. But yeah, thank you to all of you who took the time to play along. We've got more Jack Sloan watches. Thank you to you.
Yeah, so if you didn't win on this time, stay tuned. We have some work to give out.
Thank you for your support. You know, we'd be nothing without you, your listens, your reviews, your messages, and we appreciate every one of you. And then we've got some other news coming up, but we'll get to that later. We've got a couple ad reads. Harry, you're here. Do you want to do this one?
This is our new tradition. The ad read as it's being read. So
you can sabotage it as competition, whatever.
Jack Sloan produces their watches in the United States, and they think that that matters. Check out their website at jacksloan.com. That's SLOANE. And learn about their focus on community and their commitment to American watchmaking. Use steering code at checkout, and you'll get 10% off. So that's steering, STEERING.
And I will add that we are doing an event.
Yes.
This weekend, if you're listening to this when this episode debuts, we'll be at Brews Beers over on York.
Brews Off Facts.
Just at the corner of Colfax and York, and we'll be offering that 10% discount to anyone who buys a watch on site on Saturday, 4 p.m. to 8 p.m.
You can whisper the promo code right into Harry's ear.
And get the code right there. It still works. Analog or digital. So you will be there.
Although the watches are all analog.
Yeah, right?
I think this is what they call a meet and greet, Doug, if we had a few more listeners. The lexicon, right?
We'd like to invite everybody out. So,
And I'm sure we'll have a great turnout. We'll have a hell of a lot of fun. And we know we always talk about this amazing Belgian-style beer from Brews Beer. So it's your opportunity to try it.
Yeah.
See the Jack Sloan watches in person. Buy one, you know. It's going to going to be fun. So 4 to 8 Saturday.
Anyone that buys the second? A watch? Yeah, anyone that buys a watch, I'll buy them a beer. How about that?
So we'll put it right there. I'll double down. So. We'll buy you two beers. Belgian.
I'll triple down.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, I'm coming.
Come back. Come
That's
where
the flight
Jay.
Back is. Stick it, around, is it not? Yeah. All right. So. Well, we're having fun tonight. We're here with our pal, Harry Liss, and Jay from Sheffield Watches. We're the steering committee, and we'll be back. I got to give a shout out to our friend, Danny P on cars. He had a really great episode. You know, we had this long drive, so we're listening to everyone's podcast. He had Jay Ward from Pixar on, and he told the story about cars, and it was a fascinating episode, and Dan's the consummate professional and did a fantastic job. I mentioned Johnny Lieberman earlier, and it sounded like you had a Johnny story.
Yeah,
and I probably cut you off.
No. What I was going to say is, you know, we were talking earlier about Spike and Zuckerman and Johnny and even Jerry Seinfeld, but Lieberman he's constantly, I wouldn't say constantly, but more regularly posting Sheffield Watches with different bands and giving them away and he's asking for another one, and he's a great guy, and I love reading his stuff. I've for years, even before I knew he was on the podcast, he's a fascinating guy, and he's been. I give him a lot of credit because he's been working out and training, and he's been on the road a lot, and he's lost a lot of weight, and he looks great.
He does.
So, and I sent him a note. I said, man, to do that on the road, that is hard. So
Everyone I know that knows him or has had an encounter with him just goes on and on about what a nice guy, who got out of his way to accommodate you. And so I'm looking forward to having him on very much. We need to get him on soon. I have lots to ask him. He's living the dream. I mean, we've talked about this before. Doug and I used to dream as young people about being car journalists. I guess this kind of gets us part of the way there, but he's the real deal. He's the real deal.
I don't know how
he does it all.
Yeah,
honestly, but big fan of him and his work, and can't wait to have him on. So, are the face watches, are they going to be part of your collection at some point?
Yeah, you know, here's
it's got to be the demand. You know?
Yeah, well, I have I had a different attitude around it because the four of them, well, three of them, especially Spike and Paul and Johnny, were so supportive, and then there was the event that Seinfeld was on with Spike at Pebble Beach, and I mean you can't write this, but he goes, hey, Jerry, I see you have your Sheffield on, and he goes, oh yes, there's my first underwater watch was a Sheffield in 1966.
That's amazing, cool, okay, and he goes, God.
And there's this guy, blah 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 blah, and I'm just going, oh my God. So what I did, because that's very unusual, because he's not a watch guy, so he was very kind, a memory for him, right? You know, it kind of brought up the same probably kind of thing that happened for me, whatever. But what I wanted to do is just thank those folks, and I worked it so that I could put their caricatures that Dear Zuckerman created, and I got his approval because I wasn't going to go rip off somebody's artwork. You know, I know copyright is very important to people, especially to create things.
Doug's the Eagle Corner.
Yeah, over the years, so, I've learned that to respect that. So anyhow, I wasn't sure it could be done, but I only got four of them, and I said, I got something special for you guys, and I sent them to them, and
that's awesome.
Of course, they thankfully like them, which was really
their enthusiasm when they opened them, because they did. They opened them live.
True,
it's
genuine.
The podcast was exactly. Yeah, it was very, was infectious.
So I was really happy because I really appreciate, and just like I appreciate the time that you're giving me. Oh, wow. So I really do.
Oh, honored to have you here.
Yeah.
And so what happened is, I got a lot of requests for, oh, you should make them and sell them. And I go, you know, that's not the idea here. You know, I'm not gonna do that. That's not part of the plan. But we have a second set that when I communicated with Spike about it, that I said, well, we could do another one for charity. If you're up for that, you know, I would do it.
Yeah.
And so we did that. I mean,
that's fantastic.
I provided that. Yeah. And so I don't know when that's going to happen exactly, but it was really Spike's idea to do a charity version of those. Mm-hmm. And so that'll be the only other set. I don't own one.
You know what? That's probably the way it should be.
So if you win one of these, you basically be like, it's me and Seinfeld are the only two people who have this one. That should drive up the number.
When you heard that conversation, you must have just,
No, I was.
What's the opposite of a gut punch? I mean, that's what that was. Yeah.
Well, especially my friends who would call me and go, what the hell? You just have to step back and don't take advantage of stuff. I mean, I'm not a big over poster around stuff like that. I just don't think that's fair. I think that, you know, whatever happens, and thank you very much and do whatever you can. Mm-hmm. Because really, this kind of, I call this my experiment, it's not my day job, so to speak. Maybe someday it could be, but it's really about just trying to, the more you, and you could probably talk to this about your watch business, is that, you know, there's more to it as you move forward and get deeper into it. You find there's components around how you market and how you talk to people and what they expect. You know, I have a high level of, I worry that I want every watch to work perfectly. Yeah. I check every watch. I set every watch to the time that I'm shipping it to. I have that luxury to be able to do that.
That's a nice touch.
People pick up on that.
Yeah. But I would say that's I love that feeling. And I shipped out two watches today. I looked at the zip code. I set them to where they're going. And like that feeling is really important.
Yeah.
And we're all here with day jobs, right? We're all here because this is a passion project for us.
Yeah.
And nothing will replace that.
No.
And to me, that's what is the most pure and most fun and most sort of, I don't know, pressure limiting piece of all of this. Mm-hmm. And yes, I think we all want to make this our day job and want to have that freedom, but there's a little bit of an element of being able to wake up and say, okay, well, I can still pay the bills doing this, but I get to do this the way that I want to do it.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I mean, it's somewhat extra competitive to people who are doing it for a day job, so to speak, because I don't have the overhead and costs around it. My pricing isn't necessarily based on, if I had to go to a wholesale retail kind of situation.
Right.
But, you know, there are limitations. You still have to, you know, be able to make more watches. So you have to sell the ones you have. But it's allowed me a couple of observations, and you probably have some of these too, is that you can't, you have to do variations. You have to mix it up. You can't just rely on the one. And what happens is that you have to start thinking, what do I do next, and how I do a sequence, and what will my friends who are buying these, an audience, what do they want next? You know, I mean, you know, you want to you under promise, over deliver kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then when do you take a break and just stop for a while?
Yeah.
You know, it's a very interesting dynamic, you know, I feel fortunate that I actually get the chance to kind of figure it out. So this next range, though, this next automatic is going to be pretty cool. And there's some folks in the UK, especially, I find that there's a big Sheffield fan base in the UK, partly because the people that live in Sheffield have some sort of ID to it, but there's a lot of vintage users and buyers in the UK of this product, and I'm going, oh, okay, so they must have had a UK business back in the day.
There's
just, you know, and I'm still trying to keep the value proposition there, and make sure that people, you know, I mean it's kind of weird, it's like I'm not sure exactly how to expand the marketplace because I'm talking to a lot of the same people all the time. So I'm going, how many is each person going to buy? They're not going to buy more than one or two. So so it's going to be interesting to see how this experiment goes, you know.
How many people are there like you two doing what you're doing in the States? There can't be many. I mean, do you all know each other? Oh. Do you talk on a forum? I mean, are you
first one I've met.
First time we met. Yeah.
Okay.
Only two. There's the two unicorns right here.
Only two worth talking about. Yeah. So that's all that matters.
I mean, I would only say my the only other person that I took inspiration from when kind of coming up with this idea, and I mean, I didn't know where it was going to come from. I just, right. you know, had this trajectory of watches and story and family history that I loved. And, you know, Cameron Weiss was one other guy that started Weiss Watches that really stood out to me. And I remember it was during COVID that I came up with this idea, but I remember watching, I mean, I went down 1,000 rabbit holes like everyone else did. And a lot of them were watch rabbit holes. And I remember watching his Nexus story of how he had been going through watch training and was working for Patek Philippe and all these companies. And he just said, I think I can bring something back to America and do it in a really cool way and do it my way. And I'm like, well, he figured it out and he had a vision and an idea and a concept that was rooted in something. And that's really cool. And so if I have that, what's so different? And I have a lot of respect for him and have recommended his watches even to Doug's brother-in-law and love that. And I think Sheffield is an incredibly cool positioning, trajectory and all that. Yeah. And so I think there's a lot of different stories to pull things from, but I don't think there's a huge list, at least that I know of.
One of the most incredible things is there, if you, you know, look on the internet and you, I mean, not the internet, but Instagram, there is a plethora of incredibly cool watches, lots to choose from. It just depends upon the spectrum of where you and why you are buying those watches. I mean, I'm a huge fan of, like, I have Rolex and I have Monaco and I've got, you know, I love Fortis watches, the 24-hour watch. Yeah. I've been dreaming about maybe I'll do a 24, you know, a day watch.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Oh, and, totally. I mean,
there's over
so,
here.
So for me, and maybe some other people, just quickly explain what a 24 hour watch.
Well, it's just that it's a, instead of having the sweep hand, you know, your hour hand go around twice. It's a 24-hour watch, so there's increments of 1 hour, 2 hour, all the way around to the top, and you still have a second hand that keeps going around, but you end up reading the watch at a 24-hour time.
Yeah, there's, like a military time.
Well, like, I'm sorry to you know, go on some of the tangent, but last night we were traveling home for Thanksgiving. My son came home and he goes, well, I'm really proud because I can tell military time perfectly. And I was like, well, we're all really tired. Do you really, really know what that means? And I'm like, okay, well, what is this time in military time? And he was like repeating it back to me. And I'm like, this is one of the most proud moments I've had as a father. Is like, yes, like
he can do math in his head. That's fantastic.
Like, it's great. But there are these nostalgic moments that I think are coming back into, you know, sort of what is cool and hip because people lost it for so long. And military time is a perfect example. And I'm hearing these horrifying statistics about people who are like probably one generation behind me who can't tell time if it's not a digital watch. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Yeah. Is that a real thing?
Yeah. We talk about this a lot in my house. We're trying to get the girls all out the house for school. I want to get a giant clock because I want them to see time in like a relative scale. Like this is how much time you have. It's not just like this random number and it's not just dad saying you're late. It's like,
but look, a hand when this going hand around. Is getting close
why
to
why don't you get
it?
A sundial and really fuck with
it. I would like to do that. I would. I ran a turkey trot this Thanksgiving that I joked could be in time with the sundial.
But you know what? You did it. And that's another thing. So. You guys just did it, right? You know, Doug and I'm not saying this is the world's best automotive podcast, but damn it, we did it. We've done it. We have a thing.
There's a barrier, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that I'm better than anyone else or anything like that, but there's a barrier to entry. And if you just get over that barrier, then you open up doors and leave yourself open to conversations where someone sees your watch and loves it or your
that bar's a lot lower with the podcast. So extra credit to you guys. Well,
fair enough.
Because there's capital.
But it's interesting when you talk about, you know, that kind of the mindset around digital versus analog, that kind of thing. I was on a plane with a guy right as we were debuting the, and I say we because my wife helps me so much in terms of managing the
my lot wife of is stuff.
You've got a supportive wife on this.
But anyway, we're talking, all of a sudden he saw me looking at pictures because I was getting ready to send some photos from a really great photographer, Ty Alexander, shoots all of my photos. He's a great photographer online and on Instagram, and he does all the shots for my website stuff. And he does a ton of other brands. I mean, he's incredibly good. He's in Wisconsin.
Oh, no.
He's a Wisconsin guy.
Wisconsin,
yeah. And, but anyway, I'm looking at it. He goes, oh, is that a watch? And I said, well, yeah, I'm just starting this thing. And he goes, oh, I love watches. I collect watches. And I could tell he was, like, not, like, collecting Casios. He's collecting.
Yeah.
And, but he goes, I said, yeah, I said, I typically wear this Casio. And I had the $19 Lumitime or whatever. And he goes, oh, my God. He pulls his wrist back, that's the one he has on.
Oh, no kidding.
And he's going, oh, I've got another one coming, and I'm modifying it with the outer case, and I'm putting a leather band on it. And this guy, who's probably got, like Daytonas and everything else, he's really into the range.
That's so cool.
That's awesome.
And those are the guys and the people. And I have women. There's some women now that are buying the watch, too. That's pretty cool.
Harry,
that's
you awesome. Told a story about the first time you spotted one of your watches, I think, on someone else's wrist, was it?
Well, that was like when I started. My wife goes, what's your hope with this brand?
Okay.
And my first, you know, sort of element of this was if I could convince one person in the wild, you know, as we called it, to buy it, then that would be a huge moment if I spotted it in the wild. And selling something to someone, it's like comedy, right? Comedians always talk about three levels. You make your friends and family laugh, you make a stranger laugh, and then you pay people, or people pay, rather, to make you laugh. I was like, if I can commit to a stranger, you know, to buy it and spot it in the wild, that's a real moment for me. And
has that happened to you yet? Other than Jerry Seinfeld,
No, it hasn't actually. Maybe it's because I don't get around enough, but no, I mean, I haven't sold that kind of volume yet.
But it will.
It will
happen.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be humbling to see.
Yeah.
But even selling one to one person you don't know or a listener, you know, that you don't know, like that's a real moment.
I'll never forget the first time someone came up to me and he recognized my voice.
Oh,
and that meant
cool.
the world to me.
Yeah,
and I didn't know
Ben.
You and I'm not related to you. And for, you know, first time, our friend Tom Horan, that's how we met him.
He
came up to us and said, hey, I listen, Tom Horan is the chair of the Colorado Grand, which is this amazing event that validates. That he not only knew who we were, but he listened to us. It was amazing.
We weren't 100% sure at that point if it wasn't just our parents downloading the podcast a bunch of times.
Speaking of paying people to listen now.
It's a good moment. And I would be excited for you guys for that to happen.
Well, I guess in a once removed way, when owners post their watches on Instagram, that's really like... I go, oh my God, this is fantastic. That when they're driving or they're in Norway, I got a guy that did it.
So
I mean,
cool.
It's pretty cool. And and I really was excited when I shipped watches to the UK, to Italy, to Argentina. I mean,
amazing.
That's really kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, when you get people all over the place doing it.
All right. So weirdest place you've sent a watch. Or I guess not weirdest, but
least expected.
Least expected is the way.
Probably Croatia.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the least. I'm going, whoa.
Okay. How do they find out about you? Is it through Spike? Is it through the website? Is it
this guy sent me? You know, I heard you. I listened to Spike.
Oh, there you go.
You know, so that was crazy. That was great. I mean, I'd love to go to Croatia. It's a beautiful country. I love Italy, it would be pretty fun.
That's amazing. And like those moments are, I mean, at least for me, I don't want to speak for you, but you get these moments where someone does that and it checks in with you and you're like, oh man, this feels great.
Yeah.
You know, that's, someone appreciates your work and sees what you do. We source all of our leather from Argentina, and one of my favorite like car stories is a random segue is I would backpack through all of South America when I was 22 and we get down to the very southern point of Argentina and an entire hot rod community shows up. Like all these guys had driven the entire path from the top of South America all the way down to the bottom. And we're there and we're like, I'm with my best friend and they just show up and we're like, what? It's me and my buddy drinking a beer and like 60 hot rods coming down.
That doesn't happen sitting in front of your TV.
Well, were they people from South America? Were they people from the United States?
All South American based, but they were all part of a club.
But a different, up in like...
From all over.
Okay.
So they had met, they must have met like, you know, Ecuador or something, and they mm-hmm. come all the way down.
Yeah.
And we're just sitting there like finishing our... We're on this great adventure and doing whatever. And that day, I think we had gone kayaking mm-hmm. and we're sitting there finishing the day, having a beer. Quilmes is what you drink in Argentina. Ooh, and we're like, let's go have a quilmes and, you know, sit by the tip of the water. And this group of guys shows up and they're like all in their 60s and 70s and like had just accomplished this amazing thing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there and we're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
So they let us take photos with them and whatnot. But like these... It just reminds me of like these organic moments, these things that happen, these sort of out of body experiences you have where I'm like, if I tried my whole life, I could never recreate that moment.
When you do these amazing things are drawn to you. I feel, you know, it's just, I mean, the car community has been so good to us. Mm-hmm. It's not that big of a world once you're sort of in it, and everyone, I think without exception, has been exceedingly kind to us. I mean, it's amazing. It's not even, it stops being about the cars.
Right.
Right.
Well, I think our Nordstrom club in Minnesota always says it's not about the cars, it's about the people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I felt that it's incredible because, you know, some of these cars are not inexpensive in the range of the ability to buy multiple versions or otherwise. It's an incredible leveler of just authentic love for that thing that creates friendships and connections that have nothing to do with what you do, how much money you have. It doesn't even about the car as much. It's just that you're doing it and you're at the same event together. And it's just that special kind of gem of a thing that you all share that kind of creates just this bond of awareness of each other and of that sport or of just the, of that whole event, you know. And it's the same when you go to a track, you know, there's always somebody that's willing to talk to you about your car. If like, hey, what are you doing with your car? Well, I've done this, and you know, like, talk to him or get this. I mean, it's really great.
Or even I've heard constantly these stories of like, you know, you're at the track, you got your car there, and it broke, and a bunch of people will come in and be like, let's help you rebuild that. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's burn through the night. Let's everything from like, you know, we've got this part on our truck and we'll help you out with it to, oh, I know I saw a car out in the parking lot that I can actually take it off and put it on. But either way, like they all want to help there and get you racing again. I mean, there's that great bond.
And I think the watch thing is kind of similar. I mean, there's always different levels of people that have different kind of like, there's posers and people that have to have something, but a majority of folks, they're all about, and I kind of revert it back to just kind of that magical thing about an analog watch or even digital watches that are unique. It's just, they're just this, they do so many things for you. I mean, you just look at them and it's just such an unconscious thing that is always there that you rely on, and it's just, they're a machine.
Yeah.
And they're really small and they work all the time. And
they're super cool.
It's like a car that starts at 50 below. It's like, oh my God, how does this thing do that?
We do. Sometimes we get really attached to these mechanical items, whether they are the, you know, the four wheel variety or the dial variety. Yeah. I mean, I don't understand how it works and I don't care, but I love thinking about how it is working, you know, and that's why I think we get really attached to these things.
Just love the different versions.
Oh yeah. Love this one. Oh, yeah. Harry knows this. I get more comments on this watch than I do on, you know, the Rolex over there. I mean, I just do. No one ever asks me about that Explorer 2, but I've had multiple people ask me about this. That's makes you feel good.
Yeah.
You know, you guys are doing really cool stuff. I mean, it's just, any advice to someone who's sitting at home right now with some wonderful idea, but keeps...
Well, I think Harry, said the same thing earlier, is that you have to do a lot of... I was very lucky. I've sourced so many products. Like, if you needed this, boom, done. I could do it. Yeah. So it's a little different for me, but you have to do a lot of research and you know, you've done an amazing thing making stuff here and assembling here, and that the quartz movement that's from here. I mean, I'm an incredible admirer of that. I'd love to be able to do more of that. I think that that's really special, and that's a story itself. You know, I mean, that's that motivation. And but I think that it's all about, if you have a passion and you really have a focus, you want to do something. I mean, it's so cliche, you know, but you got to do a lot of research and a lot of work.
And
be ready to fail a couple of times. I mean, I had to move factories. First round didn't work.
Yeah.
So you could have gone, well, I'm not going to do it. You know, so you just have to kind of persevere.
That's good advice, though. I mean, I think a lot of people maybe expect, be ready to fail. You might have to fail, readjust, you know.
100%.
Like change directions.
My only piece of advice would be, you know, the first time second time I came on, we talked about my buddy Andrew who started to call your mother and has grown into this empire and all that good stuff. He started with just a very loose concept, you know, something that was just an idea in the back of his mind. And he got into this terrible car accident and almost died and thought, hey, what the hell am I doing with my life? And he was like, I just got to try something. And mine was through COVID and other things that happened. And I think if you just go out with an honest idea and a true passion behind something, you know, that's a fair place to start. That does not mean you will succeed. You know, there's no guarantee for anything, but I think that's at least a really fair place to start. And so I'm still very new to this. You know, we only launched a few months ago, but I would say that the story of Sheffield is incredibly inspiring. The story of you guys is incredibly inspiring because if you have a passion, if you have a desire, if you have a connection to something, that will bleed through for a certain audience. And you can't fake that.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of fakers out there and it's very easy to tell who they are.
Yeah.
And so me, you know, and you guys and, you know, all of us trying to figure out, well, what are the other components around it? Yeah. That's a different problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Figuring out what is the central component is the challenge for most people. And when you have a passion, that comes through very clearly.
Yeah.
It's all the other stuff that then you got to kind of patch together and figure out.
I mean, I think the one thing I'd add too is you have to do a lot of work before you spend any money. That I think people think, oh, I need all this money. I got to throw this, mortgage the house or something like that. It's
people
like
fall into that. You got to spend money to make money.
It's like a mentality. It's like a blueprint. You got to get your blueprint down. And if you follow the blueprint, then you spend the money and you're way ahead of the game. And that to me, because there's so much information out there for so many things. I've said this before about my day job and all the products that I've developed over many years. The products are actually the relatively easy. It's everything else that goes with it that is more important. It's the messaging, it's it's the presentation, it's just the details. The product isn't, I mean, obviously it's hard. I'm not taking
it. But you're right. I totally agree. That's a very sound piece of advice, because when you try to do all the other stuff and when you're getting ahead of yourself and when you're putting the cart before the horse, it's so easy to spend an unbelievable amount of cash. If you don't have the central idea figured out, if you don't have a vision, a product or whatever, then what's the point?
Amen. Gentlemen, we should probably wrap this up. I think we're at over an hour, but we need to do this again. This was a great conversation. You guys are living the dream. It's fun to hear about it. We've got a couple quick ad reads we need to do before we wrap this up. Behold our Rhino Signworks sign, steering committee sign. If you want your own Rhino Signworks sign, like Meow Wolf, like most of the breweries in Denver, like a lot of the cool hotels in South Beach, California, Rhino Signworks, R-I-N-O, they are your people. And Realtor, see, you think I know this by now, Realtor.
Yes.
Daryl Vaughn, he believes that with every move, your life should improve. So reach out to him at Daryl_Global_Realtor and at 720-432-5335. We got to ask him if he's fielded any crazy TSC phone calls.
Related calls? Yeah. Well, they should.
It's pretty free and easy with that telephone number. And come see us this weekend at Brews Off Facts, Saturday, December 2nd from 4 to 8 p.m. Yeah. Hopefully Daryl will be there. Hopefully Willis from Rhino Signworks.
10%
hopefully Ryan
off.
Will be there.
10% off.
Yeah. Yeah. Jay, I wish you were still in town, but
I'll be back.
We'll do this again for sure.
Reach out to us next time, and we'd love to hang out again. And you can taste some of the badass Belgian beers from Bruce.
I can't thank you enough for having me, and it's been a great experience to talk to.
Thank you,
fellow aficionados of many things, especially cars and watches. Very much appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. It's been a great conversation, and we should probably give out your website too before you go.
Well, it's very simple, sheffieldwatches.com.
And Harry?
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Always a pleasure to be here and representing Jack Sloan, and hope to see everyone on Saturday.
Yeah.
And you can visit us at jacksloan.com.
With an E. All right, gentlemen. Thank you so much. I'm Ryan.
I'm Doug.
We're the steering committee.